You are listening to Rouge, White, and Blue, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
My name is Joe Pritchard, sitting in the first banana chair this week, and joining me this week is Dr. Rouge. How'd I do?
That's very quite good.
Good. Well, I was.
You're starting to bring that.
Good. Well, I've been practicing a little bit, so that helps.
Need more of that.
Good. Good.
This is episode 105, I think.
Something of that sort. After you hit a milestone, it kind of just blends together for a while.
Blends together. Well, the reason I say that is because that's about the same temperature in Fahrenheit in Pennsylvania this week, right?
Yeah, it's been ugly our way for a couple weeks, so I'm glad to be in my nice, cool basement podcasting. Now, mind you, when I blogged, I didn't ever really do it from the basement, so I'm not the typical basement blogger, but I'm a basement podcaster. I will admit to that.
There you go.
But we've got a lot to talk about this week. Week 3 went through, some good, a lot bad. So let's go ahead and just get right into Ottawa-Calgary, and I think we can label this one in the bad column, unless you happen to be a fan of the Calgary Stampeders, in which you don't usually see a lot put into that column before November.
Well, you know, the thing is, and we should mention, you know, we joked a little bit about the weather, but as we're recording this podcast on the evening of the 4th of July, there are off and on thunderstorms in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So if occasionally everybody rejoice, but that will be the reason, of course, that everybody rejoices. You know, what impresses me about Calgary is during the offseason, this guy left. And the doomers and gloomers were, well, are they going to be second place? Granted, they've played only 3 games. 1/6 of the season, essentially. But there is a lot to this team to really like. I sense that the team has less, or there's less pressure put on Bo Levi Mitchell. And maybe now placed at least watching this team. Yeah, there's a lot of good happening there right now.
Yeah, a lot of good. Something I was worried about over the offseason was losing leaders like Hughes and Marquay McDaniel, maybe being a little bit too much for this team, mm-hmm. but they're showing no signs of that. Now, I was thinking, you know, at some point this has got to end where everything seems to come up Calgary, but it's apparently not happening this year. On the flip side, Ottawa looked pretty good the week before. But we're starting mm-hmm. to see that maybe Saskatchewan isn't what people thought they were, and Calgary certainly is more than people were getting them credit for. So where does Ottawa fall here?
Well, you know, I think you and I agreed at the beginning of the season, we thought Ottawa might be the most difficult team to figure out, that they could be bad enough to win only 7 games. They could be good enough to maybe win 10 or 11 games. And maybe 9-9, well, they play Calgary at home every year, so he's got to throw a tie in there. But, you know, maybe average would be, you know, what we expected. I don't know if you can necessarily really judge where this team is right now. Granted, they played only 2 games. A lot of other teams have played 3. But I think more importantly, you know, they had such an emotional wave with that home opener. And if you are right that Saskatchewan doesn't turn out to be the team that the league's fan base and certainly the other teams expected it to be, you know, granted, it was a win by a lot of points. I get that. But beating Saskatchewan at home maybe is not going to be as big a deal as we thought 3 or 4 weeks ago. Losing to Calgary, hey, look, Hamilton lost to Calgary in Calgary as well. So I still don't know if I have a really good feel for what this Ottawa team is capable of, except to say that I think right now they are the second best team in the East, at least until we get a real good feel for what Toronto might be able to do with James Franklin, presumably James Franklin, as the starting quarterback long term.
Yeah, this one for Ottawa, I think we might have to wait a while to know what they're made of. Because this next week they head to Montreal, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in depth later. The week after they host Calgary again, so you go from maybe some teams that are in the lower echelon of the league to Calgary to back and forth on that. You really don't see anybody about midstream until BC the week after, and then just for and then Hamilton the last week of July. So I think we might need 5 or 6 games to really have a better sense of just exactly who Ottawa is. But going back to Calgary for just a second, they just seem to have a knack for making the other team look bad. It does. You never look at Calgary and go, oh, wow, they are super impressive. Look at this big play. Look at that big play. He put up 200 yards. There were four sacks by that defender. Hey, that guy took a pick to the house and had another one. Never seems to be like that. But then when you look at at everything afterwards, it's like, yeah, that's an impressive package they put together.
You know, I think what people lose in the conversation with that team is, and again, so much talk about Bo Levi Mitchell and all of the weapons he has on offense. I think it's been 3 consecutive years now. It may be 2, but I think it's been 3 that Calgary's had the best defense in the Canadian Football League. And, you know, that gets lost in all of the conversation about, you know, throwing the ball to McDaniel or throwing the ball to Jordan or throwing the ball to this guy, or how many yards is Messam getting? Is Messam the only running back? You know, so much talk about that. And let's face it, 2 or 3 years ago, they were beating teams seemingly regularly 31-0, it seems, just because of how good that offense was and how good that defense was. But you're right. It seems the last couple of years in particular, meaning last year, and then I think it's going to be a little clearer this year, that Calgary is not just going to show up and beat you. I think what we're going to see is the discipline, the smart calls on offense, the smart calls on defense. They tactically might beat you a little more this year, when in years past it might have simply been a talent level difference that led to some pretty easy wins.
All right, well, moving on to a game that I'd rather not talk about. Winnipeg went into Hamilton with some pretty high hopes, came away with just a butt kicking. The score is 31-17, but this could have been 50-10 pretty easily. Hamilton settled for a lot of field goals. Winnipeg couldn't get the offense going. And Winnipeg also seemed to just sit back and let Jeremiah Mazzoli pick them apart. If you listen to the Blue Bomber Talk podcast, John Hodge goes over it pretty in detail as to what's wrong with the Bombers. It seems like the way that the defense has been coached isn't taking advantage of all the talent they have. Because you got guys like Chris Randall, Chandler Fenner, Adam Big Hill, Mo Leggett, and they're not given the chance to be playmakers based off of the defensive scheme we saw last week.
I agree. What bothered me, watching that game last week, and again, that was one of those open mic games. So to some extent, you know, if you picked up the terminology a little bit, you sort of had the feeling of where Jeremiah Mazzoli might be going with the ball. But it was almost as if at times Winnipeg was playing a consistent prevent defense. It was, you know, keep everything in front of us, keep everything in front of us, keep everything in front. Well, the problem with keeping everything in front of you is that also meant that you know, Brandon Banks seemed like he was catching every ball and gaining 9 yards on every play. And it you know, that sort of get in Mazzoli's face and try to disrupt the rhythm of the offense, those kinds of things weren't happening. And again, I know that, you know, Hamilton goes with that extra offensive lineman, and they have 6 guys at the line and all of that. But it I agree with that idea that I didn't get a sense that Winnipeg's defensive plan last week was anything more than let's not have the big play beat us. And what that led to was a lot of little plays that ended up beating them as badly. And I know Richie Hall, at least on social media, immediately after the game and the day after, was just getting an absolute ripping apart from, you know, Bomber fans left and right. I'll be curious to see this week if they crank it up a little more, regardless of, again, and we're gonna preview the game in a little bit, but regardless of whether it's Nichols or Streveler or both at quarterback, I'll be curious to see if the defensive philosophy is a little different, recognizing the team that they're playing as well. And again, it's a division game for them, so that may mean a little bit more than, you know, losing to Hamilton.
Well, Kirk Pettin in The Athletic today brought up an interesting piece off of this game here. I forget if it was something he had written himself or was one of his insiders, but it's, from the sounds of it, Hamilton ran 8 to 10 plays on offense the entire game. They weren't mixing it up much, and they didn't have to.
And that's my point. It was like, you know, it was as if they went, whatever the play calls were, it was like, holy cow, they're doing the same thing. These guys are dropping back. We've got a 6 to 10 yard window. Throw the ball right there. They're dropping back. We've got a 6 to 10 yard window. Let's just do sort of the same thing time and again. And, you know, I don't recall the final numbers offhand, but, you know, Mazzoli was darn near knocking on 400 yards before the night was over. And, you know, you looked at the stats, and to me it was, he got that many yards? You know, because you think about a quarterback throwing for that many yards and you think, oh, there's probably one or two big plays in there. It was, you know, 9 yards here, 9 yards here, 12 yards here, 9 yards here. Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, Winnipeg's got to look at the players they have and how they're going to use them, because this was a game that, again, if Hamilton is as good as we think Hamilton might be now, you don't match up right now with what might be the second best team in the league.
Yeah, that was a rough one as a Bomber fan to watch. And I can't put a lot of the blame on the offense myself. Mm-hmm. They didn't have a good run of it. It wasn't a good game for them. But it just felt like they never got onto the field, and then by the time they got onto the field, they were right off of it again. they just never had a chance to establish a rhythm after about the early part of the second quarter when the score was knotted up around at 10. Mm-hmm. Once Hamilton just started driving the field and realizing that's all they needed to do was keep going underneath, they had these long, drawn-out drives, which is going to put pressure on Winnipeg's offense to come back and put together a drive of their own. And with a rookie quarterback in Hamilton against what they've got going on right now, I wouldn't want that against any defense in this league right now, and it just never ended up working out. Once the pressure was off, of course, things got a little bit better for the offense, but by then it was well too late for anything to really come of it.
Agreed. Yep, it was a cosmetic 14-point loss. It could very well have been, as you said at the beginning, 21, 24, 28 points. If Hamilton had converted some of those drives into even more points than they did.
All right, well, let's get off of that one because I'm tired of talking about it. BC goes into Edmonton, the storyline there being Ed Hervey and a whole bunch of former Eskimos going back to their old home. And early on, it looked like BC had this one in control, but then
BC'd. You know, one of the things that we've talked about, meaning Oz, you and I, over the last couple of weeks as we were, you know, looking overall at what we thought about the teams, is, you know, does BC have enough, even with all the changes, does BC have enough to compete with what we expect to be four really good teams in the Western Division? And even if you say, okay, there's only going to be three really good teams in the Western Division, all right, do they have the talent to keep up with those three elite teams? And, you know, they beat Montreal in week one at home. They looked okay doing it. But again, you know, you don't need a whole lot of great plays to beat Montreal the way the current iteration of that team is put together. Right now, you'd have to say no. You know, BC is probably the fifth team in that division, despite the fact that, you know, Saskatchewan is getting a lot of headlines for the way the last two games have gone. What bothered me, I think, more than anything from a sort of BC Lions perspective, from a fan's perspective, if you want to use that, is that, you know, a lot of talk about new look offensive line, a lot of talk about, you know, Jonathan Jennings being healthy, the shoulders not hurt, those sorts of things. Yeah, but the first two games, that offense just is not putting up enough points. And I'm not sure suddenly, and I think they play consecutive games against Western Division teams in the next couple of weeks, if I remember correctly. I think they play like 4 out of 5 on the road or something along those lines. If they don't figure it out, you know, in the next month, they could get to the end of July and be ballpark 1-5, 2-6, somewhere in there, and really have no chance to compete the second half of the season.
Yeah, they are there. It's a home and home with Winnipeg for the next 2 weeks. It's going to be Saturday, Winnipeg at home, and then the next Saturday, Winnipeg in Vancouver. So,
And then they go back out on the road for 2 more games after that. They've got a 4 games in 5 weeks road swing, and there's another bye week thrown in there somewhere. You know, and so you're looking at a team that needs a spark, needs to put some consistency together, and is playing 4 out of 5 on the road. That may not be the best combination. They've got to find a way to when they get the lead, do like they did against Montreal and hold it, but they've got to do it against better teams.
Yeah, I mean, they've got to be more consistent on offense. They've got to get some longer drives in there. Edmonton, though, I mean, what can you say about them? It seems like you really can't count them out, even though it feels like they're going down the same injury path they were going down last year.
Yeah, that is both the you know, you seem to say, you know, or you always think, yeah, the law of averages is going to turn around and go either in your favor or against your favor. But I agree. And, you know, that's the thing right now. You know, Mike Riley can cover up a lot of shortcomings, but he can't cover up all of them. And, you know, look, the way that C.J. Gable ran the ball last week, wow. That was a clinic. You know, that sort of harkened back to his days in college when he was just motoring up and down the field, you know, against various college defenses. Edmonton's going to be okay if they can continue to find a way on offense to always put, you know, 28 to 30 points on the board, because that might be enough with all those injuries on defense to overcome the shortcomings. But you take either Riley or Gable out of that lineup right now on offense, oh boy, because there's just too many holes on defense because of the injuries. And you're right, it is one of those, didn't we talk about this last year? And, you know, you'd have thought you wouldn't be talking about it again this year.
No, and that was a lot of what I based my preseason prediction off of. I have Edmonton winning the whole thing because they were still good enough last year, even with all the injuries, to come within a couple of points of Calgary on the road. I felt like they got better in the offseason, maybe a few of things addition by subtraction, but I felt like they got better in the offseason. But here we are again. Kind of feels like we're sitting in the same exact spot, but that's not a terrible thing for Edmonton to be saying right now either.
No, I mean, look, if at midseason they are ballpark 5-3 with all the injuries they've had, that's not a bad situation to be in. And again, with somebody like Mike Riley, they could very well be 6-2 with all those injuries. And, you know, as those guys slowly start working their way back into the lineup and get back to game speed and get some practices under their belt and can work out and do a sort of normal weekly routine, who knows? They are still on paper, I think, the first or second best team in the West. Let's see how it plays out.
All right, and finally for this past week, we have Montreal going into Saskatchewan and coming away with their first win in how many games?
They had lost 13 in a row, and it was something like 324 days since they had won a game.
Yeah, and then they go in to Mosaic and beat the Riders. Would you put this one more as Montreal played well, or is there just a lot of problems going on in Saskatchewan right now?
When I wrote my power rankings for this week, the first thing I wrote when it came to Saskatchewan was, all right, which is the bigger concern, the uncertainty at quarterback or the uncertainty at cornerback? You know, you tell me. Do I think the Daron Carter experiment can deliver big positive plays? Absolutely. We've seen that darn near every week the guy makes a big play. The problem is that he might have been exposed last week. And if you caught the interview that Chris Williams, the wide receiver for Montreal, did with the TSN folks, you know, he made a point that a guy with Daron Carter's size is simply going to have a harder time versus a smaller cornerback in getting his hips and his body turned and then chasing down or staying even with a fast defender, or fast receiver rather. So as fast as Daron Carter is, if somebody like Chris Williams, and let's face it, Chris Williams is maybe now finally coming back after that horrific knee injury towards the tail end of the 16 season. If he was able to blow by him, you know, what's going to happen now with teams that are suddenly going to look at Carter and say, let's put our fastest guy on him and let's just see if we can outrace him. But as problematic as that is, you know, Brandon Bridge either is or is not going to be a CFL starting quarterback. And what I mean by that is, and again, he's the property of the Rough Riders right now. Either he is going to be given a chance to make plays, he's going to make mistakes, all young quarterbacks do, or essentially he's going to be a perpetual backup and will play backup duty and spot starting. I did not like the fact that he was yanked at halftime last week. I thought that sent a really bad message to the entire team. Montreal won, but this game really felt like Saskatchewan lost. Montreal won the game on paper, or on the scoreboard rather, but to me it was a Saskatchewan loss, not really a Montreal win.
Yeah, what it really comes down to for me with Saskatchewan right now is taking myself out of my Bomber fan shoes for a moment. Looking at how Chris Jones has built this team and is building his depth chart for this week, and I'm seeing Rider fans, Rider writers, Rider podcasters saying the same things here. They seem to have an imbalance on their roster. They don't have they have one backup defensive back and needs a backup safety. They have a ton of backup linebackers. That is apparently what Chris Jones likes to do with special teams. And then you have the quarterback position, which might be a little bit out of his hands, out of Chris Jones's hands, as far as what kind of talent he could bring in. But let me make the point on the quarterbacks first while I'm thinking about it. If he thought Brandon Bridge was a starting quarterback, he doesn't go out and pay Zach Kolaros what he's paying him. And Brandon Bridge is in there week one. They probably bring in a few other people to push him, but they give him the ball and let him go for a while. I don't believe Chris Jones believes in Brandon Bridge. Obviously, he didn't.
I agree.
This past week here, he pulled him at halftime. I think if Brandon Bridge is going to get the chance to be a starter somewhere, it's not going to be in Saskatchewan. And right now, all we're waiting for is for Chris Jones to fall in love with a different quarterback, for Brandon Bridge to go right back to the bench. Now, Watford didn't have a terrible, terrible second half, but he's a lot more raw than Brandon Bridge is. He does have some potential, but I would like to see him a little bit later on down the line. You got to give Bridge a chance to take this job, because Kolaros is going to be out for at least a couple more weeks. Are you going to keep playing musical quarterbacks and not settle on anything, make any sort of decisions, or do you just hand the ball to Bridge and say, here's your chance, either you sink or you swim, we're going with you? I don't understand why he's pulling him at halftime. Now, as for the corner issue, I'm completely boggled by this. I have nothing against Jerron Carter as far as him athletically wanting to be a cornerback. He seems to have some of the skill set needed, and it's not a bad idea to be able to do that in case there's an injury to the other side where you gotta go in and cover for it because the rosters aren't quite as big as the NFL. Great that he's versatile like that. But there's a simple fact that if you're taking him out of your offensive lineup and playing him on defense, not only are you playing in an inferior corner player, you're also playing an inferior receiver because you're taking him off of your offense where he's clearly a very, very good player. I'd understand if he's the first backup because of how Jones wants to set his lineup, but I don't understand why they have so few defensive backs on the roster to begin with that they'd be in the position that this early in the season they're playing Jerron Carter by choice at corner. I don't get that at all. Like I said, I have no.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm not trying to say that I fault Jerron Carter for this in any way, and I find it very impressive that he can play the position as well as he can, considering he's played wide receiver most of his career. What I am saying is I don't like Chris Jones's roster management.
Agreed. And the other thing with Carter playing on defense is a young quarterback like Bridge trying to gain confidence, trying to gain experience, trying to demonstrate that he can be a long-term starter in this league is losing his best offensive weapon, not by choice, essentially, not because Jerron Carter's hurt. If Jerron Carter's injured, it's a different story. But because of, as you suggested, the way that that defense is put together personnel-wise, you've got no choice but to take your best offensive weapon away from a young quarterback. That just doesn't seem to doesn't seem to make any sense. And then we were looking down the road with BC schedule a little bit. If I remember right, Saskatchewan plays Calgary, I think, twice in the next 3 or 4 weeks. If Chris Williams was able to get by Jerron Carter, would Eric Rogers at this point right now be sitting there going, "Come on, don't put me on the middle or on the inside. Put me on the end, and let's see if I can blow past him." Really unsettled situation in Saskatchewan. And another team that could find itself 1-4, 2-5 or so, and maybe not with the talent that we thought to overcome that. We'll see in the next couple of weeks.
Right, so let's go over that schedule here real quick because I have it pulled up. We've got Hamilton at Saskatchewan. That's the first game we'll be previewing here shortly. Then they do have a bye week because week five only has 3 games. We have week six, Saskatchewan's going to Hamilton. So if Hamilton's the team we think they are, that's a pretty rough road just there. Then they come home to Calgary. Then they go on the road to Edmonton. Then they have another bye because it's another 3 week or 3 game week, and then week 10 home to Calgary, the first shot they have at playing a team that we probably don't think is in the top three of the CFL right now is week 11, and that's in BC. And then after that, you've got the back to back with Winnipeg, so a
Oof.
rivalry set. So it could get ugly quickly if they can't get the ship righted.
Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. We'll have a really good feel what this team is capable of after that 5-game stretch with Hamilton, Hamilton, Calgary, Edmonton, Hamilton, or Calgary, Edmonton, and Calgary again. I don't think it's going to be 1-7. I just don't think they're going to lose all five of those games. But similarly, I don't think it's going to be 6-2. I don't think they're going to win all five of those games. So where do they fall in the middle between 6-2 and 1-7? If they're 4-4, they're treading water. Maybe by then Zach Collaros is back. If they're 3-5 in the West, oh boy, especially if Winnipeg turns it around. If they're 5-3, hey, that's pretty good shape, especially recognizing that they're trying to rejigger the defense on the fly. Going to be a lot of pressure on that team, though. If they lose again this week and now it's 1-3, there's going to be an awful lot of pressure, especially with a bye week, to demonstrate that some again, I know they made two roster moves this week, bringing in an offensive lineman and a defensive back, specifically a cornerback. But boy, it's going to be a lot of pressure to do more in a short period of time.
Yeah, and that corner they brought in, Matt Elam, was a former NFL draft pick. The Riders also brought in a former Michigan Wolverine quarterback in Devin Gardner, and they got the rights to Denard Robinson, who is also a former Michigan quarterback who moved to running back and receiver when Gardner showed up. So Jones seems to be building his roster around big names from the South. When you take a look at Calgary, how many players on that squad do you remember from U.S. college football or the National Football League?
Not many.
Not many.
And that's not a criticism. It's just not many. And here's the thing. They've already got Jerome Messam, who basically didn't play last week. I think he was on the field for two plays.
Yeah, and he's third on the depth chart this week, too.
Dear Lance. I mean, they've got Messam. They've got Thigpen. They've got Trey Mason. How many running backs do they want? How many do they want? But it does. It as much as Jones talks about that sort of bravado that surrounds him, I wonder if there's a little bit of panic going on right now. I'm not bringing in a quarterback. I'm not bringing in a running back if I'm Saskatchewan. I'm bringing in an offensive lineman or two to build some depth there. And I'm bringing in as many cornerbacks as I could find, past, present, and future possible great ones, and hoping that one or two of them stick.
Yeah, just taking a look at the roster moves they made this week, it looks like they may be setting up to play some triple option because Jones doesn't trust his quarterbacks.
A triple option? Holy cow! I mean, is the head coach at Navy, the Hawaiian guy? I forget his last name, Ken something or the other. Is he going to be brought in to be the new head coach? They can run the triple option, for crying out loud.
I don't know, but with all those former Michigan quarterbacks, is Brady Hoke or Rich Rodriguez far behind?
Yeah, I know, really. Maybe they're going to do what Hamilton did last year and bring in, experienced head coach and make him offensive coordinator. I mean, yeah, we're getting a little too far down the road here, but the bottom line is Saskatchewan's got to figure it out, has got to figure it out fast, because the schedule the next five games is not kind at all.
Well, let's see if they can figure it out this week against Hamilton. Hamilton coming in on Thursday night. So a short week for Saskatchewan, as well as coming off of a loss to Montreal. Hamilton's hot. What do you see happening in this one?
I see Hamilton winning. At the beginning of the season, I thought Hamilton was the team to beat in the East. And I think Oz agreed with me a little more than you did. Oz was really still is really on the Hamilton train. Let's not kid ourselves. I don't know if his prediction of 13-5 is, going to come to pass, but if the Eastern Division is really one team and then three others are just there, maybe he's right. But the bottom line is, what I like about this Hamilton team is they get penalties. I get that, but they're disciplined enough on defense to make the plays when it counts. They've got the confidence in the quarterback. They've got the confidence with the receivers. June Jones is the mad scientist who's putting it all together and making it work. I'm on the Hamilton bandwagon. I think that team right now, far and away, is the best team in the East, And I think they're good enough to go into Saskatchewan and win this weekend or this week.
Yeah, Hamilton's my pick too, but I kind of feels a little too easy for me. Because last week I felt the exact opposite way about the Riders that I did this week. I thought they were going to walk all over Montreal, and now I'm going the opposite way, and it almost feels like it's just a touch too easy, but I can't talk myself even remotely close to even thinking about picking Saskatchewan this week, just with everything that's going on. Oz agrees with us. He believes that Hamilton's going to win, but he does seem to have that niggling doubt that I do, that it feels too easy, because he's taking Saskatchewan plus +6, and he thinks that a whole bunch of people are going to put up points, because he said he would take the over on 49 points.
You know, it's funny. A year ago, if this game were played in week 4, we'd have looked and we'd have said, Saskatchewan has all the pieces coming together and Hamilton is completely falling apart. A year later, it's just the opposite. It you know, the fortunes of professional football, you know, really are that way. Do I think Hamilton's going to blow them out? Probably not. But do I think Hamilton right now is the better team? Absolutely. Do I think they're the more confident team? Absolutely. You know, they almost won in Calgary. You take away that one interception toward the end of the game, and it's only a touchdown difference. They, you know, more than held their own against a couple of other Western teams as well. Yeah, I think this team is capable and will, in fact, go into Saskatchewan and win on Thursday night. And don't forget the thing you mentioned at the very beginning, that short week is not working in Saskatchewan's favor at all.
No, it absolutely isn't. Moving on to the next game then, we've got Ottawa going into Montreal. We saw Ottawa had a rough week last week. We saw Montreal have a pretty decent week last week, but we didn't spend a lot of time talking about Montreal because we were too focused on Saskatchewan's woes. Montreal is down Drew Willey from all indications I could see. I don't see him starting this week with the concussion he suffered. So it's Jeff Matthews and Vernon Adams around somewhere, but Montreal's got quarterback questions too. Matthews is on his third Eastern team, I believe, because he came up with Hamilton, and I think he spent some time with Toronto too. So I wonder if this is his last hurrah, if this is his last chance to show he belongs in the league.
The thing with Montreal is they seem stuck between roughly 17 and 20 to 21 or 22 points a game. And that, you know, that just puts too much pressure on your defense. You know, I think Montreal is probably good enough to put up about 17 points in this game. And I don't think that's going to get the job done. Yes. Now that there's a victory there, a lot of that pressure and a lot of that tension and a lot of that, you know, is this the week? Is this the week? Is this the week? A lot of that stuff is out of the way. I can't imagine right now Ottawa losing. Again, granted, they didn't play well last week. I get that. I can't see Ottawa losing this game to Montreal, even though it's a road game for them. And again, road game, Ottawa and Montreal, what, 2.5 hours by car? It's not like the other side of the country. I just don't see them winning this one.
I think the live mic's going to pick up a lot of profanity from the Montreal side of things. last week was just interesting to watch because, yes, they had the disclaimer about the potential salty language, but it was a little bit more than you would expect from that type of a program. Interesting to see if they're going to fire the 7-second delay button a little bit more often this week, or if they're just going to leave it as is. But I do enjoy these live mic games. I think Ottawa's going to enjoy this one. Oz agrees. He's taken the Ottawa minus -6.
This is one where I could see, you know, especially if Trevor Harris gets into that kind of groove that offense can get into, I could see them winning pretty comfortably, couple touchdowns, you know, a kind of, you know, 30-14 kind of win, something in there, 31-17 maybe. I think this is a bounce back week for Ottawa.
All right, so heading into the Saturday doubleheader, which is just fantastic. I'm gonna love this day. Edmonton heading into Toronto. So Edmonton is playing pretty well. Even though they're nicked up, Toronto, on the other hand, is playing their first game since Ricky Way went down. We'll be seeing James Franklin as the starter. Toronto really didn't have a good start to this season. They're 0-2. They're the only win this team, I believe. Does that change this week?
I think Toronto's going to pull the upset this week.
You do? Okay.
I do. And I base that on a couple of things. One, I think James Franklin's knowledge of the Edmonton defense. Remember, when he was there, Mike Benavides was the defensive coordinator. Mike Benavides still is a defensive coordinator. I also think that Mark Trestman has had, you know, the first bye week for this team, I think, was just pure luck that it happened last week. He had the opportunity to bring everybody together. He had the opportunity to say, all right, let's take a deep breath. You know, we know that we're not going to have Ricky probably for the rest of the season. He's probably not going to put on a uniform again, at least for this team, and probably not for any other team. We need to give these two quarterbacks ample time to demonstrate what they're capable of. And let's face it, guys, we're the champions. We have to expect that we're going to get everybody's best shot every week. And this has the feel of a kind of trap game, where if you're Edmonton, you think, all right, we're going to Toronto, they're beat up, I think we're going to be okay, I could see us pull. This has a feel of an upset to me, and I think Toronto's going to pull off the upset.
Well, I know Oz doesn't agree with you. He's taking Edmonton -5. I also don't. I can see where that potential is, but I feel like I need to see a little bit more out of Toronto than I have, because they didn't put up a good effort in week one. They put up an even worse effort in week two. So I'm going to need to see, I don't need to necessarily see a win in this game to feel like picking them going forward, but I need to see a little bit more than what I saw in week two before I feel comfortable moving forward with this team.
And again, let's face it too, though, the two losses they had, they were far too rusty against Saskatchewan. I think all of us agree that basically giving all the starters training camp or preseason games off was a mistake. They got steamrolled by Calgary, but let's face it, I think Calgary had a little bit of, you think you're going to beat us again? Good luck. You know, kind of revenge going there. I also think Calgary is very capable of punching any team in the mouth any week when it wants to. This might be Toronto's week to say, okay, we've hit the reset button. First two games are over. Who cares? Let's play like we're capable of. I think they can win this game this week again. But this is a close one if Toronto wins. You're not looking at a 10, 14, 18-point Toronto victory if the Argos do indeed pull off the upset.
All right, well, we'll be looking forward to that one, but by the end, I'll be rooting for it to just be over one way or the other, because following that is BC at Winnipeg. That is the follow-up game in the doubleheader. We agree that we haven't seen a lot out of BC. Winnipeg is also in a situation where they're starting to show some signs of not being all that cohesive either. Oz has got Winnipeg 3.5 and a win versus BC, and the victory versus BC. What do you think?
I think Winnipeg wins this game. I'm not yet convinced that BC is ready to compete in the Western Division and consistently win. You know, I think we saw last week they went to Edmonton. They had some success. They couldn't sustain it. They struggled to sustain that success against Montreal in the first week, but again, beating Montreal is beating Montreal. This game for BC, this is one of those where if you're playing this game the first week of the season, too much excitement, too much energy. If you're playing it the second week of the season, maybe you got a chance. You're playing it right now when Winnipeg needs to bounce back, is at home, might be getting their starting quarterback back into the lineup, even if he doesn't start, even if he plays a handful of plays. Everything points to Winnipeg winning this game. Everything.
I wish I could say everything is pointing toward Winnipeg. I am taking the Bombers. I'm not gonna be doing anything all that crazy here. But if they sit back in zone all day again, Jonathan Jennings might put up some pretty good numbers. So this might be closer than people think. I do think the Bombers win. I hope the defense gets its stuff together. And by that, I mean the play calling more so than the effort on the field. Because I didn't really have a problem with anybody's actual performance individually. Mm-hmm. It just the team was in the wrong set to take care of what Hamilton was handing to him.
BC still trying to get its offensive line squared away. Jonathan Jennings is still trying to reestablish that confidence. I think a lot of blitzes this week if you get a chance. Blitz them like crazy.
Yeah, or moderate it. Blitz some, zone some.
Yes.
And not just
yes.
Stick onto one set of plays. So yeah, I've got the Bombers this week. I'm hoping to see a little bit of Matt Nichols. I'm not too worried if he's not the starter, though. Chris Sterler has done a pretty good job, more than I could have hoped for from a pure rookie.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully this is the last time we see him play for a while. Hopefully we see Nichols going forward. But
mm-hmm.
I can't say enough about him exceeding my expectations. So that will wrap up our preview portion here. The Rouge, White, and Blue is recording this, and we'll have this out on U.S. Independence Day, showing that we have the freedom to cast a pot about the Canadian Football League because we live in this country, and it's
a holiday. With a tariff or without a tariff.
Yes. No tariffs attached to this show, thankfully. You have any final thoughts this week?
I'm excited to see Matt Nichols come back, not because I don't like the play of Chris Trevler, because I think Nichols is, you know, he's as much as Trevler seems to be that sort of big personality, Matt Nichols is sort of the opposite. He's sort of the anti-personality, if that makes sense. And I'm not criticizing him. He's just not the kind of guy that's going to be yelling at defensive players if he runs for 10 or 12 yards. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm very much looking forward to seeing if Toronto is indeed going to bounce back. They get whacked in this game. Now you're looking at two or three more Western Division games. Two of them, I think, with Winnipeg in a row, if I remember right. Two with Edmonton, two with Winnipeg back-to-back-to-back-to-back. You could be looking at an 0-6 start for Toronto. So I think this game has some real we got to get it done to it. And then in the other games... I think we're going to get a real good feel for what kind of moxie Saskatchewan has. And in the final game, I'm looking to see if Montreal now, with all of the questions about when you're going to win, with all of that out of the way now, are they capable of putting together four quarters? And if they are, Mike Sherman, please figure out the headset.
Yep, headset one, Mike Sherman nothing, but
zero.
does that mean the headset scored a Rouge? Does the headset get a honorary Rouge this year?
Ooh, I like that. I might have to put, especially since Calgary and Winnipeg have yet to contribute to the Rouge standings, and I get into some funny debates with that on Twitter with some folks earlier this week. I'm still trying to get Rob Maver to respond to one. He's not doing it yet though. I might have to give the Mike Sherman headset an honorary one this week, just because.
Yeah, that's great. Who is in the lead of the Rouge standings, by the way?
BC and Toronto are front and center leading the Rouge standings at this point. Read into that what you wish.
Okay, well, I think that's pretty simple on my end as far as how to read into that, considering the records of the two teams.
Precisely.
Yes. So we will let you all go this week. Next week we will be back to review all the games that we previewed, and we'll talk about a shortened Week 5 slate. We might have to do something a little bit might have to do a little bit of something else because there are only 3 weeks or 3 games to cover in Week 5. So mm-hmm. while we figure that out, though, we will let you get out of here. We will talk to you next week from the Rouge, White, and Blue.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.